Do they make fat man drinks?
Oh,
It's
that's
just like
great.
gravy and alcohol.
I think you need to patent that right now.
Sausage gravy and vodka mixed.
Give me a whiskey gravy on the rocks.
To episode 64 of the Rated NA podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. It is a Sunday evening due to scheduling conflicts for us today, but how are you guys doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Radical.
Fantastic.
Doing good.
Sweet.
It's Father's
I've been
Day.
Traveling a whole lot. Yeah, it is Father's Day. Sunday, Father's Day. I actually didn't get to see my dad today, but my dad, I'm actually on the West Coast now. I've
Woo!
Joined Team Hillary for about a week, and then I'm going back to the East Coast for a little bit. But I saw my dad yesterday because he came up to this wedding that I was in.
Oh, did he come?
And,
that's awesome.
Yeah, he came. Both my parents
awesome.
Came.
Excellent.
Which was pretty cool. I don't think I've ever seen them in California, so it was really surreal to like kind of roll up and be like, "Oh, my parents are in California. This is bizarre." So that was cool. But you guys. No, none of you guys got to see, any of you get to see your dads for Father's Day?
I did not, no.
No, I called.
No. I called, yeah.
I no. called, too.
Good, yeah. Well, we love our dads.
Yeah.
Dads are
So what's
cool.
been going on? Other than daddy love.
Man, I was going to ask you if you had any stories to tell based on your recent events.
Oh.
Or any stories you wanted to tell,
yeah.
I guess.
Well, I can tell one in person, but one will not be on the podcast for
that's fine.
I will be ostracized by many, many people if I tell the story of what happened to me. But let's just say anyone, Scott, you've played Saints Row 2, right?
No, I haven't. I've only played the third one.
Oh, yeah, Saints Row the third, sorry. And
yes,
like
I have.
There are a couple weapons from that game that surfaced in a particular bachelor party that I was a part of.
Oh my god.
So I'll kind of leave that one up to your imaginations.
That's ridiculous.
It was pretty unique. It was a unique life experience. I'll leave it at that.
I kind of assumed that if you were going to be at one of those bachelor parties, it would be this one that you're at or were at.
Yeah, you know, and I was the best man, so I was supposed to like plan all of this, but I don't know anything. Well, I know a little bit, but I don't know a whole lot about San Francisco. So a lot of the guys that live up here planned the events of the bachelor party, and I was totally cool with that.
Yeah.
So I just kind of rolled with the punches. And wow, did I experience some new things in life.
Oh, wow. There's a lot to do in San Francisco.
Yeah. So all I'm going to say is Saints Row the Third. Look at the weapon. Look at the weapons listing online, and use your imagination. And
oh, come
a
on!
Couple
man,
of,
that's awesome.
Fart in a Jar was not one of them, by the way.
It's like they say, man. YOLO. YOLO
oh,
forever.
Yeah, for real.
That word is banned from our podcast.
It should be
from here on out.
It
should be
it's
banned
amazing.
From every podcast.
It is. And other than that, I've just been traveling a lot. I'm for those of you who know a little bit about California. I'm currently podcasting from. Pleasanton, you know where that is, Hillary?
That's in the East Bay.
Yeah, it's kind of the boonies-ish. It's kind of like about, I don't know, 40 minutes from the city. And then the wedding was like in Vallejo, which is like about a little over an hour. So, you know, a lot of driving back and forth, but it's been a lot of fun. We got to go into the city for a bit and bum around and enjoying it. So adventures are always good.
Awesome.
Excellent. Let's do the rundown. So we're going to talk about an update to the Xbox app for mobile. We're going to talk about Comic-Con. We're going to talk about a sneaky internet rumor about Mass Effect 3 multiplayer. Another sneaky internet rumor about plans for the next generation Xbox. We're going to talk about more Xbox quote 720 news about a potential lineup. And then Dead Space. And then we're going to review Lollipop Chainsaw, Spirit Camera as a part of our summer game pile. We'll talk a little bit about Kingdoms of Amalur. We're also going to maybe talk a little bit about Hunger Games, since I think Matt made it to the end of Hunger Games. And then let's see here. Our question of the week is, in honor of Father's Day, did you grow up with a gaming / nerdy dad? If so, what games or movies did your dad play growing up?
That's a great question.
It is a great question.
You guys came up with it.
Combined.
I took bits and pieces of what people told me and created a question. So
let our powers.
Nice. I know that.
Yeah. I did not come
My question was, yeah, my question had nothing to do with that. So I think you're lying.
I'm just trying to give you guys credit here. Just let it happen.
I did not send you a question. So I know that it's not me.
Shush.
Oh, okay.
All right. So I came up with it. I'm awesome. Let's just move on.
Oh, my God. So Hillary, what have you been up to?
Let's see. I've been working a lot and getting ready for a big international trip that I'm taking to Asia, which I'm pretty excited about. I leave soon. And yeah, I went to a Crab Cat function last night, which is pretty fun. And let's see. What else? I have a friend that's kind of really big in social media, and hopefully they'll be giving me some tips. So I'm on a learning process right now.
How do you achieve like perfection?
In social media?
Yeah. Like what tips is she going to give you?
I don't know. That's why I'm getting some tips. No, cool. I think it's about, you know, opening up a public conversation and creating a community and, you know, really getting, you know, the conversation around things that you love, your interests, and, you know, hopefully learning from each other.
Oh, excellent. That's great that she's doing that.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm pretty excited.
Very cool.
Just the tips.
There we go. I was waiting for it.
Just the tips.
Oh, man.
Scott, what have you been doing other than drinking?
Well, I mean, it's not like I just was drinking. I mean, I did eat in between the drinking, but let's see. What have I been doing this weekend? You missed that part. I've had a couple of drinks earlier in the day. And,
I approve.
Nerd approved. I piled some dinner on top of that, so it's not like I'm just fresh off the bar or anything. But I've been doing a lot of gaming, which is nice.
Awesome. I'm jealous.
Doing a lot of writing at work, and that's pretty much it, man. Unfortunately. Oh, I saw John Carter last night. You guys seen that one?
Carter. It was just poorly marketed and actually a decent movie.
Yeah,
I would not agree with you on that.
Not a decent movie.
Here's the thing. I think that there are a lot of plot lines that are sort of intermingled and not really explained all too well. And then I think like some of the more interesting plot lines kind of get buried for the action and then kind of fall by the wayside. And I think maybe that was the flaw of the movie, in addition to, like, you know, nobody going to see it. But it was like a good action movie. I thought it was like nice to look at and fun to watch. So
awesome.
I don't know. That's that.
Yeah. I don't know.
Not a fan.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a mess, but I thought more could have been done with it, or they could have made more or something. I don't know.
The best characters in it were the aliens. The human type aliens, or the human type Martians or whatever. Not as interesting as the, I don't know what they're called, but the big aliens. I thought that storyline was pretty cool.
Yeah, cool. But there was just a lot going on in the movie. It was really confusing. I think they could have done a better job with exposition. Matt, what have you been doing?
I started a new job this week.
That's pretty awesome.
Awesome.
Yay!
And I've been hesitant to talk about it, but I did, and it's been tiresome. It's been a lot of work. So I did training for the first few days, and it was very not normal schedule for me, which means like being up at 6 a.m. and working until 6 p.m. or whatever, and there's
never fun.
My train ride's like a little longer now, so it's just like I'm just trying to adjust and be used to it, but that's going pretty well otherwise. And I told you guys about a ridiculous picnic I went to this weekend, and I read the Hunger Games in its entirety.
Cool.
So
awesome.
Exciting.
Very cool.
Yeah. Sweet. I have not been gaming like at all. It's weird. Like zero gaming, and I feel weird.
Well, it's a weird time, because if you're not, I mean, there are a few titles that have been trickling out, but
yeah, but
you know, it is the summer game pile time.
You know,
so if you're not working on that.
You know what's crazy is Melissa was like not harping on me, but you know, like I was gonna buy a new game, and she's like, "Really? Don't you have a ton? Like, can you sell some of them first or something?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, I'll clear out the old games that I'm not gonna ever play again." And I opened up my drawer. I have one of those IKEA TV things, and it's like a drawer full of games. So I open up the drawer and I start going through them. I have like 30 unplayed games like that I have not even started. Just sitting
on the floor,
and I was like, oh my God. Because they're all games that I've just bought over the past like 2 years, probably, whenever they were clearance or on sale or something. I just pick them up and have them. But yeah.
Dude, well, we got to blow through Gears of War 3. What?
There you go.
I have too many to list, but I have just an insane amount of games to play.
Well, that one's next. We're going to do that one.
I still
one,
need to beat Max Payne, too, because I'm near the end, even though I'm annoyed with it.
Nice.
You hated that game.
It really is. It's like truth. A good game. It's just tedious. It's really tedious. So,
yeah.
All I have to say is he's the worst bodyguard ever.
Yeah, he kind of is. He keeps losing them over and over and over again.
I know.
Poor Max Payne.
Oh my
so
God.
Hillary, did you say what you've been? Or are we all? Yeah, you did. Everybody, we all talk.
Yeah,
we did.
I have to say, my entire weekend revolved around skinny girl drinks. So skinny girl margaritas, skinny girl sangrias, skinny girl cosmos.
I saw an ad. Is that like a vodka brand or something? What is that skinny?
No. So one of the chicks on the Real Housewives of New York City, she kind of branched off of that and started her own like fitness stuff, like books and videos, I think. And she just kind of started developing herself as like a healthy living type person. And she developed this drink line that's like low calories, low carb. And she started off with margaritas, and then it just like picked up in success. And now she's got all kinds of different like wine and ready-made like cocktails, and it's pretty cool. I mean, they taste really good, and you don't have to feel quite as guilty when you're drinking a skinny girl drink.
Except I have to feel kind of weird if I'm drinking a skinny girl drink.
Yes.
I don't know. Dave was drinking he didn't even realize that he was drinking the skinny girl.
I feel like
sangria, and he's like, "This is really good." I'm like, "Oh, that's good."
I feel like every week we learn a little bit more about Dave, and
I know. I cannot wait to hang out with him in July. I'm really excited about this.
He's multifaceted.
I'm excited. Do they make fat man drinks? It's just like gravy. Gravy and alcohol. It's like, give me the fat man drink. It's like,
I think you need to patent that right now, PS.
There you go.
It's like mudslides. It's like
sausage gravy and vodka mixed.
Give me a whiskey gravy on the rocks.
Bacon. I want some bacon vodka.
Yeah.
I think that exists. I would not be surprised.
Yeah.
There's like bacon everything right now.
I know. For Christmas, I actually got in my stocking bacon flavored syrup for coffee.
Oh my God.
I am on the fence about it. I'm a little afraid of it. Not just
it's breakfast in a cup.
Yeah. Oh, bacon.
Yeah. Bacon coffee.
It's the best part of waking up.
News.
Okay. If anyone has tried out the Xbox Companion app on Windows 8, you'll notice that there's some functions built in that allow you to connect to your Xbox if you're on the same wireless network and browse content and launch applications and control the Xbox well. Just after E3, they updated the Xbox apps on both iOS and Android to have the same functionality, which is pretty cool. So now, in addition to doing things like seeing your friends list and browsing like sort of Xbox.com content, you can use your phone as a remote control for the Xbox and use it to like check achievements and launch content, which is super cool. And I think really what this is it's sort of like a setup or like a precursor to what's eventually going to be smart glass probably later this year, which is
very
awesome.
So I downloaded this.
Does it work well?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Matt.
I downloaded this. does it just recognize when your Xbox is on or something? Or
I think what you do is once you launch the app, you flip over a couple of pages and then there's a button that says connect to Xbox. And I think if your phone and your Xbox are on the same wireless network or
like how the Roku remote
like
works.
That, yeah, it's just like the Roku remote, except that it does a little bit more in terms of like if you're watching a video, it'll give you the time position in the video. I haven't really looked at it while actually playing a game.
Huh.
But it seems like there's a lot of functionality built in that's really cool. And I really do think it's a setup for smart glass because I was looking at some screenshots for Dance Central 3, and I saw one of the screenshots was like a picture of a cell phone with like a track list in it, so you can like browse through songs and like launch the next song you want to play and stuff like that. So I really think that's the start of smart glass, which is really exciting. So
cool.
Kind of curious to see what happens with that.
Yeah.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
So you know how when you're online on Xbox and you can see what your friends are playing and what level they're on, or what, you know, if they're, what style they're playing, what level, whatever.
Yeah, I keep on friends all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to stalk friends, right?
Yeah.
But have you ever, absolutely, I don't know, it could be just me, but when I'm trying to, like, get through a game fast, like, let's say, you know, I'm not a bad player, but, like, sometimes I'll admit it, I'll take it down to casual once in a while.
Yeah.
I'm always fearful. Yeah, I'm always fearful that someone can see that.
I don't think so, because I think the statuses for the games are controlled by the game makers, so... Mm-hmm. Your actions in the game, I think those messages are generated by the title itself, so it's really hard to say. I think it's just a matter of whether or not that was programmed in, but I don't think, I'm looking at it now, I don't think if you look at friends, I think it just says what they're doing. It's not like when you're actually in the Xbox, it tells them like
where you are,
where they are in the game. Yeah,
browsing the,
so you know how Google is setting up their new, I don't know, I guess it's just integrated to Google. With when you have Google Plus, so you can see kind of what your friends are searching for. I don't know if you've heard about this, but basically if you're like Hawaii, and then like all of your Google Plus friends can comment on that or send you links or whatever.
They're trying to do that in Bing as well.
Yeah,
actually it might be Bing that I'm thinking
it's
of.
Through Facebook.
Yeah, I think it's Bing.
Okay.
No.
Wait, the whole social searching.
Yeah.
I'm too many skinny girls. Yeah. Uh-huh. So do you think, do you think that maybe with, you know, this new Xbox app that potentially, if let's say someone's watching something specific on Hulu, do you think that it'll become a social thing? You know, maybe you'll comment on it like, oh yeah, that was a great Mad Men episode, or yeah, that Saturday Night Live was amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it makes sense. It would, and also that if you have that sort of integration, it'll probably prompt other people to use that app as well, because they'll want to feel included. So I don't particularly like, I have my Netflix settings and stuff changed so people can't see what I'm watching. Yeah, not that I sit there and watch like Skinemax all the time, but I do watch a lot of like really messed up documentaries. And if people watched, it's like, why is he watching like, you know, Nuremberg trials 18 times? What's wrong with him?
Yeah.
What's his obsession with Nazis?
my Netflix is like Nazi supreme. Not that I like Nazis, because I don't, but I watch a lot
buff.
Of documentaries.
There you go.
But I don't want people knowing that, you know. Well, I mean, I guess I just...
Well, now they do.
Great. So, yeah, I think that's really cool. I think smart glass is going to be a lot of fun. The only problem is, you know, if you're going to be contending with the battery life of your tablet as well. So hopefully it's never too important. You know what I mean?
I don't think that's as big of a deal, though, because it's not like people game on the road. Well, I mean, people game on the road, but it's not like... This is usually a living room device. So if you're... iPad sitting next to you, it's not like you can't just plug it in if you really want to use it, you know, while you're...
Yeah.
And really, like, when I'm away from the house, the extent of what I do with the Xbox app is I turn it on, I see if anyone's playing Mass Effect, so that when I get home, I'll jump on and start playing. And that's really all I do with it, you know, when I'm not at home.
Well, also, this opens up the ability so that, you know, when your wife is sitting in the other room, or your husband, depending on who you are on this podcast, is sitting in the other room... You can get on your phone and change and pause and switch the videos while they're watching them, which is really the best part of having phone remote access to any video device in the house.
Exactly.
That's pretty cool. Indeed.
All of a sudden you switch it to like My Little Pony.
It's fantastic. I've done it. You know,
our wives would probably actually really like that.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks for putting My Little Pony on. We appreciate that. Yeah. So next up is I put an article up when I first got here, because there have been a couple, I don't want to say leaks, but the different networks are actually releasing their Comic-Con schedules before Comic-Con actually has their official schedules posted. For those of you who have been to Comic-Con in the past, you know, like the official San Diego Comic-Con schedule doesn't go live until about like a week before Comic-Con, so you actually have no idea why you're going there until you actually, you know, you have to get your tickets about 9 months in advance, but you really don't even know who's going, but you know, pretty much a safe bet that everyone is going. So I just kind of wanted to ask you guys, are you going to try and hit up any, you know, for those of us that are going, sorry, Scott,
that's okay.
Next year, I'll get you a ticket this year. for those of us that are going, is there anything you're like super looking forward to? Is there anything you wouldn't want to miss? I know Hillary's going to be working for the majority of it, so I don't even know if she's going to get an opportunity to actually see anything. But is there anything you guys are kind of looking forward to?
I'm going to camp out for the Twilight panel.
Are you?
No.
I wasn't.
No way.
Hey, to each their own. I like a lot of messed up stuff. So if you liked that, I wasn't even going to tease you. Go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say I would be excited for the Fringe panel.
Yeah, because it's the last one.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Such a super fan, but
The Fringe panel did get announced early. It's going to be on Sunday this year. So the good news about that is, for those of you who've never been to a Comic-Con, Sunday is like the quiet day, and by quiet, there's still 100,000 people plus there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not quiet at all, but it's more quiet than the other days. So panels are generally easier to get into on Sundays, and a lot of shows that are kind of, I don't want to say on their way out, but shows that are in their last season are being moved to the Sunday panel time slot. So Fringe is one of those. So hopefully we can get in there and see what they have to say.
Oh, it's going to be so bittersweet. I'm so upset. But I'm glad they get a finale. So
yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Ash.
Absolutely.
Does this Wednesday list mean that it's a preview pass only thing?
Yes. Ah. Yeah. Go ahead and read through that, Matt, if you wouldn't mind, because I don't have it
open. Yeah, so Wednesday, July 11th, which is preview night, you're saying it's going to be, I don't know what this is, but 666 Park Avenue. Arrow, Cult, The Following, and Revolution are all going to play their pilots in room 20. And the reason that's exciting to me is because I was like, oh, Arrow, I wouldn't mind checking out that show, but it's in ballroom 20 on Thursday, and that's one of the rooms that's like near impossible to get into generally.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, the thing that's cool that they do is they do a preview night, so you can go on, if you get your tickets early enough for Comic-Con, you can go Wednesday night to the night before the con actually starts, and they'll have a tiny little bit of programming, but they'll open up the show floor. This year they're showing, and they do this, you know, they do this all the time, but this year they're showing a lot of pilots for shows that are new next season. So you can actually see them, you know, months and months and months before they're out. I do kind of want to check out a couple of those, so I may actually see if
I think Arrow and Revolution are two that are on my radar right now.
Yeah, I think Revolution looks great.
And then 666 Park Avenue, I guess it's got Terry O'Quinn in it, so if you're a Lost fan.
Cool.
But yeah, I mean, this list looks pretty good. I'm always really hesitant because it's like, I'm not a panel person. I'm not good at waiting in line for 5 hours. So I did this 2 years ago at the very end and then wished I had done it a lot more, which is kind of picked the more offbeat kind of quirky panels, the voice actor panels and the author panels, things that are less trafficked than these massive. I mean, the things, the TV and the movie ones are like impossible to get into half the time.
Yeah.
And just huge, huge, huge lines.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I'd be willing to check out, like, there's certain ones that I think always put on good ones, like the Adult Swim guys I know always do awesome panels. And I think you've gone to some G4 stuff, Ash, that you said is always really fun.
Yeah, yeah, they're fun. Yeah, I think it's a question of, like, you know, after going to so many of these conventions, you have to – it's like risk versus reward. The whole point is to have a good time. So if you're, like – if you want to be, like – the information travels so quickly now.
Yeah.
You're not going to be the first person to know anything anymore. By the time the panel's over, it's going to be on every blog site on the planet. So you don't have to worry about, like, you know, being the first to know, you know, what's happening, you know, in the next season of Fringe, because it's going to be all over the trades in, like, 2 seconds. So just do what you have to do to have fun, and, you know, never wait hours and hours in line for like anything. I mean, that's just kind of a waste of your time and energy.
Well, but you could get a lock of Anna Torv's hair and take it home with you and put it in your binder.
Your binder.
I think I'm definitely going to try and check out this preview night stuff. I think the Nerd HQ stuff sounds awesome. I'm probably going to do a couple of those. Yeah. And then otherwise, like I said, I'm going to in and out on the quirky panels.
I need to talk about Scott's hair binder that he's. Did you guys catch that? He just said he was going to store Anna Torv's hair in his binder, and I want to know.
Well, I mean, it's Scott. He's not going to leave it unorganized, hanging around somewhere. Come on,
right?
That's true. It's probably.
I just thought it was an appropriate time.
That's like DNA. Are you going to like clone her?
Oh, that would be brilliant, and I'm sure she would like it. You know, being like a fringe
sure
person.
She would
so.
Like it.
Oh God.
Thank you for cloning me, strange boy from Florida.
I just thought it would be an opportune time to say something creepy about my love for Fringe. And That was the best I came
Joshua
up with.
Not Joshua Jackson, but Anna Torv.
Oh, yeah, definitely Anna Torv.
I did, to make you feel better, Scott, I did see a Fringe panel a couple years back, and she was really, really funny and seemed like a really cool person. So that awesome. Probably makes you feel even better about your clone collection.
And like, honestly, like after that show's over, I'd be excited to see what John Noble does afterwards. I think he's going to be great.
The crazy doctor.
He's an incredible actor. So
yeah,
we'll see.
He'll be amazing.
Cool.
Are any of you going to go? Is anyone going to go to the masquerade?
No, mainly because I think the Masquerade is awesome, but I've only been this will be my 10th Comic-Con, and I've only been to Masquerade twice because it's gotten so huge that you essentially need to camp out most of Saturday when the tickets actually open up for Masquerade. You'll spend, you know, 4 or 5 hours in line to get your Masquerade ticket, and then if you want to get a good seat, you got to sit in line for another couple hours.
So what is the Masquerade exactly?
Oh, so Masquerade is one of the hugest, well, probably the biggest, I want to say, in the United States, a costume contest for San Diego Comic-Con. I mean, Hillary would know better than I, but I mean, people work all year on their costumes for Masquerade. And this is really where Crabcat kind of got its fame, was from the San Diego Costume Contest, which I think they got, didn't they get Judge's Choice? Wasn't that their big reward?
Yeah, so you'll see it. You saw the Comic-Con movie, right? The Morgan Spurlock?
Yeah.
Comic-Con, yeah. So that's the big competition that they were in during that movie. So Holly got Judge's Choice. But yeah, that was really the beginning of the Crabcat group getting noticed. And that was unfortunately before my time. I came on like the month after. But it's a great place to showcase, you know, your art. So for cosplayers and for, you know, people who want to get into the art design and practical effects industry, it's a great place to get seen and noticed. So it's pretty awesome. Fantastic. I think that the bar has been set super high. I mean, not just by Holly, but by other you know, really talented people. So, you know, cosplay is only getting better. Yeah, I mean,
it's getting to the point where it's almost ridiculous, though, because I've seen, like, even when I went to it a couple of years ago, there were guys that were dressed up as Transformers, and their costumes would actually transform with them inside the costumes. And it's like,
that's crazy.
Where do you go from there? It's absurd. The level of talent is pretty incredible. If you're into costuming and stuff and you don't mind waiting in a whole lot of lines, definitely hit up the costume contest at Comic-Con, or the Masquerade, rather. It's pretty incredible.
Awesome.
Yeah, and usually afterward too, the people in costumes, the ones that they can, you know, have a lot of modality and the ones that can walk around and function with, you know, in the public, they usually come out and will showcase, you know, their costumes. So even if you don't get a chance to get in, let's say it's full or whatever, chances are you'll see some of that amazing work afterward. So, you know, just kind of look around for it. You'll see, you know, masses of people swarming costumed folks, but it's pretty cool. I mean, you can meet a lot of really cool people and get ideas and, you know, cosplay is really evolving to be something that's movie quality all the time. So it's pretty awesome.
That's amazing.
Very cool.
Okay. So would you guys like to talk about Mass Effect 3 rumors?
Why wouldn't we?
Ooh.
Wouldn't be an episode of Rated NA without some Mass Effect talk, right?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
So I haven't heard any in a while. I've been kind of out of the loop for a little bit. So what have you guys heard?
There was an article floating around earlier this week about a rumor about upcoming Mass Effect 3 multiplayer content, specifically that the next map pack will be maps based on Earth, which could include Rio, Vancouver, and London. Of course, there will be new weapons, or there's rumored to be new weapons. And then apparently 6 new human classes, which are like class names that are names that are not classes that are in the game currently. So on this quote rumor, the human classes are called Destroyer, Paladin, Demolisher, Slayer, Shadow, and Fury.
Interesting.
Yeah, so they could be like mashup classes or classes with different abilities and stuff like that.
Or maybe even Cerberus, because Cerberus are human. Yeah. So maybe we'll get some more Cerberus classes. I have yet to unlock any of those, by the way. Kind of sad.
Yeah, I only have that Vorcha. That's all I've gotten.
I got one Vorcha soldier. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I haven't spent enough time with multiplayer lately. I've only gotten like the Vorcha, and I think I can't remember what else I got, but See, that's how bad it is. I haven't been playing, but we should set up some time to play because I think we all need to unlock some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, for real.
Absolutely.
And oh, I think and the Harrier. The Harrier's awesome. The gun.
Which one is that?
It's like the semi-automatic assault. It's like assault rifle, but it's the
Madoc.
Amazing.
The Madoc. Yeah, the Madoc. I love it.
Cool. Yeah, I'm down. Amazing. I'll be back to the East Coast Thursday, so
yeah,
I will be ready to play.
It's good times. More
Mass Effect. Has there been another weekend, a challenge weekend announced?
Well, there was no, it hasn't. The last challenge weekend was a week ago. Mm-hmm. So this weekend, you know, as in like a few days from when this will be posted, will probably be announced on Wednesday, I think, as is custom.
Cool. I should be down for playing that weekend then. So hopefully we get some new stuff and it'll be fun. So if these rumors are true, I'm excited. I'd love to see them, continuing with new content.
What kind of challenge do you think Earth could present?
I don't know.
More clusterfucky kind of areas
I definitely think because of what happened on those original maps, like you're right, the maps will be harder. You know, it's going to like, they'll make you move. Like there's not going to be places where you're completely, blocked off on all sides and safe at all times. I think it'll be continue to be like more madness, which is what I want. I mean, it's
of course.
I would assume that they're trying to keep people away from, you know, farming money with Fort Kickass, because if people do that, then they're just they're no longer going to have the desire to really work at the game. They're just going to want the money, because I mean it's easy money. Who wouldn't want to just go to an ATM and press a button and have money spit at them as opposed to actually working for it? So I don't blame them.
And I guess sort of in related news, I mean even though I don't get to play Mass Effect multiplayer all the time, I think about it a lot when I'm at work. And for those people that don't know, there is a like if you go into the BioWare social site and you go into the multiplayer section of the forums for Mass Effect 3, they actually post all of the multiplayer balancing notes that they post periodically. So if you're wondering about a specific weapon, or you know, if you want to know like how much tougher the Geth are from when they were before, like all of that stuff is posted in those notes. I was really excited because a weapon I use all the time was made more powerful, and I was like, really?
Awesome.
They buffed it. They buffed the saber, and I was like, thank God.
That's awesome.
That is amazing. So,
you use that thing all the time. What rank is it, by the way?
It's
do you have
one.
It up at all? Still one?
It's a one?
Yeah.
Saber
wow.
one.
You kick ass. Well, it's like me in the Carnifex. I only have a two, and I rock that thing like crazy.
Man, there's just a couple of weapons in that game that you can just like wreck shop with, and it doesn't matter like what level the weapon is at. You know what I mean? If you put it with the right class, like it's amazing. I just want more. I want more stuff. Like I really hope that somewhere down the line, and I would even pay for this, I really hope that there's like a different multiplayer mode other than like a horde mode. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, like, if not now, then perhaps in the future. I think.
Capture the flag, kind of.
I don't even know what that mode would be, because I don't want it to be competitive. I still want it to be cooperative. So.
Yeah. I want to see a cooperative campaign.
Hells yeah, that's going to be Mass Effect 4.
An entire four-player cooperative campaign.
Yeah.
Battle for Earth.
You mean sort of like Dead Space 3 that you said that you weren't going to play?
Uh-oh. We're going to talk about that in a second.
No, I said I was going to play it. I'm fine with
co-op. Maybe we should talk about that right now. You want to talk about Dead Space 3? Okay.
All right.
So this is just a quick bit of news that... pretty much the headline of any article that you'll see online is EA is aware of Dead Space 3 concerns of fans. So basically, like, the way I wrote it in the show notes is that, like, EA knows that they're caving in with Dead Space 3. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. We talked about that in the last podcast, I believe, how we're like, oh, man, we hope Dead Space doesn't become something that it's not. You know, we want it to stick to its survival horror roots, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, we also talked about last year when we heard there were rumors that they were going to do this. And we did talk about it on a podcast. And, we were concerned back then as well that, you know, they were just basically trying to make more money with the Dead Space franchise by making it a cooperative action experience. And they did it, which is fine. But, you know, I don't know. Like, part of me is a little upset. Like, okay, whatever. But I'm still going to play it. And I know it's still gonna be a lot of fun. It looks incredible. You know, it looks like. But I love third-person action titles, so...
Yeah, I mean, if you read the quotes in the article, they're really just like, you know, they're just toeing the line, and there's not, like, anything juicy in there, but you know, they're basically saying, like, you know, yes, we're aware that it's co-op, and, like, we know that the fans think it's not going to be, like, as, like, this, like, terror scary, and it's going to be more, like, jump scary, and, you know, they say that that's not going to be true, and it'll still be scary and stuff like that. So, you know, it's going to be one of those wait-and-see things, but now we actually have a reaction from, you know, somebody on that side about fan concerns.
Do you think that they were listening to our podcast?
Oh, yeah.
I would never say that again because you gave me so much shit last time.
I was just waiting for it. You know, no, it's possible, right?
I learned my lesson. It's possible. Sure. Yeah.
Or we're just so in touch with the community, right?
That's exactly what it is.
I mean, this is definitely
We do represent a pretty unique demographic on the podcast. Like, all four of us are very different gamers, mm-hmm. and we all enjoy very different things. But it's like, you know, so we do, you know, the stuff we talk about is relevant, I would like to think.
I concur.
Yes.
Yes. I don't have my show notes open, so I can't help with the segues. Sorry.
Well, we will move along then. Speaking of awkward segues, let's talk about Xbox 720. And I have a little bit of news, and Hillary has a little bit of news. So what happened earlier this week was that somebody posted on Scribd what looked like a PowerPoint presentation about why we need, like, pretty much the screenshot in one of the articles says, why do we need a next-gen Xbox in 2013? And it's a very, like, business-oriented presentation where it's like, you know, we have threats from these, competitive threats from console makers, competitive threats from people that make, you know, home theater boxes for your living room. And then there's an interesting slide here in the screenshot about current Xbox 360 limitations.
Yes.
And it might provide an indication as to where the Xbox 720 might go. So the concerns are no full fidelity AAA games plus Kinect version 1 sensor. Let's see what else. Xbox limitations will not support full range of XTV platform scenarios. For example, 1080p video plus video chat plus HTML5 apps.
That's really interesting to me, but...
Yeah. Lacking modern entertainment capabilities such as Blu-ray and native 3D output.
I'm excited about the Blu-ray.
I think that's pretty fascinating too.
Is there a four disc changer in there?
There's not. They're missing out.
Yeah. No, that one was not a limitation. They did not list that as a limitation of the current
limitation.
Xbox
only one disc changer inside of our current Xbox.
Oh, man. I hope the thing is like the size of like a large suitcase. Like, check out this bad boy.
Oh, my God. It's absurd. I mean, if they really did everything that is listed as a limitation here, like cannot run always on, cannot run multiplex or concurrent applications. Like, can you imagine like, oh, I'm playing Mass Effect. Let me bounce out of that and like go to my Hulu real quick and pull up Colbert Report or something. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it makes sense on PC.
You're kidding yourself. It 100% makes sense on Xbox. You know, you're playing it kind of already does it. It just does it with self-service stuff. So, like, if you're playing a game and somebody signs online and starts playing a different game, like, you get all that activity, that messaging and stuff. But what if it's with their apps? Since they're launching this whole app platform with Hulu and all that kind of stuff, now it could say, oh, Ash just jumped on and he's watching, you know, Stephen Colbert. Do you want to comment on it? And you could be able to do that without, you know.
Or how about this? How about I can launch side by side a game and ESPN at the same time? Something like that. Maybe like a little picture in picture.
I don't think that'll happen.
I always hated picture in picture.
Yeah, I know. I'm pushing it.
I don't know why. The more I think about it too, like, why don't they have Xbox? Why don't they develop it to have a battery? So let's say you can make it more portable.
How long?
You know, because
it
now it's
seemed like
that battery would be tough. Yeah, I don't know. It's a pretty high power system.
But I think you can do it with gaming laptops.
That's true. I mean, it's too bad D the P isn't here to comment on this because he travels with his system all the time.
Yeah, but the gaming laptop batteries are like, they're for one, the only ones that last forever are Apple and they run low power. But the gaming laptop batteries are like 50% of the machines now. They're huge. I mean, literally, a laptop battery is like the back half of your laptop is your battery now because they run really flat and they're big.
Yeah,
Xbox your suitcase Xbox.
I mean, it's possible. I guess you could.
I don't know. I would sacrifice. I would sacrifice size for that.
I
mean,
you'd still need a screen.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's true. Well, what do you guys think of this always-on capability? It's something that the Wii has. It's something that the PlayStation kind of does. Ash, if you have PlayStation Plus.
Ash just does it anyways.
Yeah, I do.
I'm terrible. Sorry, let me say then, always-on / low power.
So wait, leaving my Xbox on is a bad thing?
Well, how about this? What if the Xbox had a sleep mode? Yeah. You know, where it's like, yeah, instead of like...
I mean, that seems like... I think technologically the new Xbox, whatever it ends up being called, it's not going to be the 720. That's just kind of like a...
Yeah.
It's going to... Hopefully it's something cool like Ticonderoga or like, you know, something awesome. But
oh, wow.
Well, if it's called Ticonderoga, then we know they listen to this podcast.
There you go.
Give me some money. Never know. Internally, they could call it Project Ticonderoga, and we would never know.
That's very
so.
True.
Let's just say that they're doing that. Yay!
Yeah, they are totally.
Yeah, but you know, just seeing the recent screenshots of the new Unreal Engine and stuff, I'm excited because you know more horsepower is really. I don't care about all. I mean, I do. I think all the new bells and whistles are awesome. But what I really want is more processing power. I want it to be faster. I want load times to be a lot shorter. You know, no pop in, no pop out, that kind of thing. Like when you play a game like Skyrim, you can actually see the mountains in the back draw in, and some games still use fog and stuff like that. So I think it's going to be able to enable developers to really use a lot of the technology that's been available to PC gaming for a while now. So
how about
I just want
more
to
see, more co-op experiences with more processing power? Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, larger matches, things like that, better AI, all of that is only made possible through, you know, new hardware.
Mm-hmm. Well, this might be a stupid question, but do you think that maybe your Xbox account with your points and your avatar will be, you know, transferable onto the 720? It would really stink to have.
Oh, yeah. Oh God.
It would really suck to be like, oops, guess what? Yeah. Your gamer score is zero.
Yeah. We'll be the first to launch the take back gamer score.
God, hold the line.
Well, I mean your profile doesn't even like the profiles don't even really exist on the console anymore. They kind of exist on Xbox.com.
Yeah.
You know, so to the extent that like you know, the divide between Windows 8 and Windows, you know, Xbox 720 like narrows, I really think that there will be more opportunities for like I don't want to say cross platform play, but at least tighter integration with stuff like Smart Glass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So along with the 720 stuff, IGN has come out and kind of they've made a forecast of what they think the first lineup will be for 720, and it's a lot of the games we talked about after E3. So one of them being Star Wars 1313, which I think Scott, you said that better be a next gen because it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Also on the list 100%. Is Watch Dogs, which we all had a good time over.
Yes.
Yeah.
and surprisingly,
whoa. What are you talking about?
I know. I was gonna say something else, and I'm like, that just sounds bad.
I had a party in my pants because of Watch Dogs.
I don't know where my mind was going with that one, but
50 Shades of Watch
Skinny
Dogs.
Girls.
What?
Yeah, exactly. but also on the list is Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Patriots.
Okay.
A new Bungie game called Destiny that I've not heard of, and it looks a lot like Halo. Okay. I don't know if you guys have heard about that.
It's,
have you?
Yeah, it's a first-person shooter with many multiplayer features.
Interesting.
But
at least Bungie's sticking to what it's good at, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I think,
and I haven't had a chance to look at the trailer, but it's on IGN's website.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it'll be a lot of new design, which it looks like. There's the like, you know, it's still going to be a Bungie game, I think. I don't think it's not going to stray very far from the Halo thing. Maybe they hire some real writers. That'd be fantastic.
Ooh, ouch.
They also mentioned Call of Duty 2013, where I guess they're not specifying.
God.
Yeah, and then a Forza Motorsport game.
Awesome.
So, but yeah, I was really excited to see that Watch Dogs could potentially be next gen. I mean, it stinks in terms of having to be patient, but yeah. That would be really cool to see that.
And by the way, I saw some footage of that new Forza, and I'm not the biggest racing guy in the world, but I have played Forza games in the past. The new Forza actually enables you to drive like cross country. And it looks like photorealistic.
Yeah.
It's absurd how beautiful it is. So I was hoping that was going to be next gen as well.
So can you see like the biggest ball of yarn or?
I don't know. I don't know if you can do things like the ball of yarn, the giant dinosaur out in Arizona and stuff. But it does look incredible. So
did you ever think?
Go ahead,
I was going to say, did you ever think that we live in a day and age where something other than a sports title would be titled with a like a date, like a yearly date, like Call of Duty 2012, Call of Duty 2013? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, yeah, right?
I'm not sure if they're calling out that that's the name of the game. I think what they're saying is that, of course, there'll be another Call of Duty title.
But it might as well be. I mean, come on. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Every year. We're going to get new, like, new vanity covers, like different world leaders on the cover of Call of Duty. Who's on this year's Call of Duty?
Yeah.
Someone dared me. These are wasabi peas. You guys like wasabi peas?
Those are awesome.
Yeah,
I love them.
Those are amazing.
But I was in the park in San Francisco, and there are bums everywhere. And it was pretty amazing. And I was eating wasabi peas, and my buddy Mark was like, just eat as many as you can in one bite. So I took like this handful, and we regressed to the point where we were like, you know, 7 years old again. So I shoved like a whole handful of wasabi peas in my mouth at one time. And I kind of felt like I got shot in the head. It was the most agonizing. It was like my nose just was like draining. I was like, oh, it was awesome. Cleared my sinuses.
So about the homeless guys in San Francisco, really quickly, funny story. So generally they're pretty cool. I mean, there's like a couple guys that will come up to you and like sing you a song and then ask for money. But one guy came up to me. It was a drunken night stumbling around the city, to be fair. This guy stumbles up to me, like really raggedy, older guy, missing teeth, the whole nine. And he comes up to me, and it was the funniest sales pitch I ever heard. He's like, please just give me money because all I want is a $5 hookah, and I died. You know what I did? I got $5.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
There was a guy years ago at the wharf that, like, I found out later that this guy that lived down at the wharf, this homeless guy, was making like 20 grand a year hustling people. And he actually had an apartment. So the first guy did not. Well, the first guy was, he just had a sign that said, "Why lie? I need a beer." And that guy made a ton of money. But there's also the guy, the very famous Bushman. You remember? Have you heard of the Bushman in San Francisco?
No.
He dressed up like a bush, and he like right outside at like where you get on the I guess the boat for Alcatraz. He would dress as a bush and hide in the bushes, and you could pay him a couple dollars to scare your friends, and he would like jump out this crazy like, you know, disheveled guy dressed as a bush and scare your friends. But he was like raking in the bucks. It was awesome.
Hilarious.
Yeah, that was probably like 10 years ago though, so I don't know.
Oh, geez.
That's innovative.
It is.
He really innovated the homeless person panhandling business.
It's the next generation of asynchronous extended experiences in the living room.
Next Seriously, generation guys. Hobo.
Yeah.
He was hobo 2.0, if you will.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so before we say something really terrible, we'll be back with some reviews of Lollipop Chainsaw, Kingdoms of Amalur: The Reckoning, or Reckoning, and Spirit Camera 3DS, and a strange app that I got to use this weekend during a bachelor party called UberCab, which I'm excited to talk about. And Matt's going to talk a little bit about Hunger Games, and I'm going to unplug my headset and run away while he talks.
Sweet.
Cool.
We'll be back.
You just heard some music, and now we're going to talk about some things.
Oh, man.
Does that sound good to everybody?
Wow.
That is how it works.
Yeah. So, yeah. Scott, you played Lollipop Chainsaw, which I'm actually kind of jealous.
Yes. Well, we're going to find out. You didn't play
cosplay actress.
It's on my...
Jessica Nigri. You actually played the game Lollipop Chainsaw.
That is correct.
It's on my Gamefly list.
Thank you for the clarification.
I wanted the listeners to know that Scott did not play Jessica Nigri. He played the actual game, Lollipop Chainsaw.
Right.
So,
awesome.
We will try to find out by the end of this review if you should be jealous or not. How's that?
Okay.
Well, anyways, I kind of feel like when I'm doing this review, I should end all of my sentences like this so that we can talk about the game accurately.
Oh, no.
But anyways, Lollipop Chainsaw is sort of like a beat-em-up action game. And it's kind of like God of War in the sense that you can unlock combos, but it's very much unlike God of War in the sense that it's not very deep and complex. And I don't think it's supposed to be, because it's like a lot of tongue-in-cheek grindhouse, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer kind of humor. So this game comes from Grasshopper Manufacturer, who, you know, the guy over there is Suda51, who's made games like Killer 7, No More Heroes. They did something else recently, too. So pretty much his style is to do, like, I don't know, this weird Japanese punk rock style that kind of, like, makes hyperbole out of, like, American stereotypes, if that makes sense. So
okay.
In this game, you play a cheerleader. And it's you slay zombies, but it's like totally normal, and all of the bad guys are like devil, like rock guys that hate the cheerleader. It's really bizarre. But the problem,
what?
Yeah,
most devil rock guys do hate cheerleaders, just, you know, to, in their defense. I mean, that's a pretty accurate thing.
So, I mean, it's so weird to try to explain the game, because it doesn't take itself seriously at all. You know what I mean? Yeah. But the problem is that, like, when you first start playing the game, like, the gameplay, like, doesn't feel very tight, and the camera is also a little difficult to control. So if you're coming from a game, like a third person gamer, you're used to, like, flipping the camera around and, like, maybe like a little bit of, like, suction when you're trying to punch at somebody. Like, if you're trying to get a punch to connect with a character, you kind of expect to get a little, like, help when you're getting there. And this game, like, doesn't always do that. So, like, it's very rough around the edges. And
the camera's a bit loose. I mean, fighting games, you need to have a really tight camera.
Yeah, the camera's super loose. Let's see. The game only has about, like, 6 or 7 levels. So, like, it's a Japanese game, and it's really like it's more like an arcade game. And when I say arcade, I don't mean, like, Xbox Live. I mean, like, in the arcade. This is kind of like an arcade game, you know, in the sense that...
points. Number crunching and stuff?
Oh, yeah. It's totally Japanese. So, like, what's important here? Score attack, time attack, and, like, your reward for beating the game is playing it again. You know what I mean? Like, those are the cornerstones of all Japanese games that aren't RPGs, I think. You know, I'm pretty sure. So, like, unfortunately, that's kind of my beef with it, is that when you play through a game where, like, the point of the game really is to, like, have fun, beat up guys, like, unlock stuff, like, unlock costumes, unlock abilities or whatever. Like, I played through the whole game. I don't think I unlocked more than, like, 30% of the material. And because there's only, like, 6 or 7 levels to play through, and really, like, the reward is, like, now play through the levels again on score attack, or now play through the levels again on, like, very hard mode. And, like, for me, there just wasn't enough there to want to keep playing. Am I really going to play more hours of this game just to see the girl in another costume?
Yeah.
I guess that's the problem.
The answer is yes.
Yeah. A lot of people would.
Yeah.
And does it have the notorious pink costume from PAX East?
I didn't even get that far. Playing through the game.
I think that's one of the unlockables.
Yeah. I only unlocked 2 costumes, and I saw 2 more that I could unlock. And then, like, that was it. But you spend your currency unlocking other things in the game anyways. It's a hard bargain. I think for some people, I think a lot of people are going to love it. I think the idea of, like, playing these levels over and over again for mastery is something that's fun to do. And, like, there's stuff to collect through the levels. And then there's, like, a rankings mode where you play for score, time, or cash, which they call zombie medals in this game.
Yeah.
And you can see how you stack up against your friends and stuff like that. It's a really fun game. But when you compare it to other games where the campaign is longer and you have, like, you know, by the time you get to the end of, like, a God of War style campaign, you're pretty certain that as long as you've played well, you'll unlock maybe, like, 90% of the content. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for a game like this, I would rather have had, like, 3 times as many levels and maybe not play the game a second or third time, if that makes any sense.
Okay. Well, let's shift focus to, like, in terms of the actual combat itself and maybe the animation and voice acting and stuff. How did you find – hey, Stoli, how did you actually find the rest of the game?
I think the rest of the game was great. Like, the presentation was great. You know, like, I think if you're used to, like, Suda 51 games, like, you'll know where the humor is coming from. And I really enjoyed the humor. it gets a little weird. It's cool. It gets a little weird at times, but, like, the game is kind of, like, told in a comic book style, and at times it almost has, like, a Borderlands look to it.
Cool.
Even though it's, like, nothing like Borderlands. I don't want to give people the wrong idea, but
yeah.
I think the dialogue is cool. Like, the voice acting is great. Like,
I know Tara Strong did the voice of Starling. So I mean, Tara Strong is, you know, from Teen Titans and a bunch of stuff that we love. So she's one of the best in the business. Yeah, so I was happy that they picked her for that. So
absolutely. The delivery of the jokes is good, like kind of one-liners that come at the right times to make the game like
cool.
I mean, like, I was interested. That's the problem, is that I was interested the whole time I was playing the game. Like, I was having a good time, but then when I got to the end, I was like, oh, you know, like, I don't know that
you
I
just wanted it to be a bit deeper. You wanted, like, maybe the narrative to be a little bit more rich, and you wanted the story of the cheerleader to be deeper.
Just deeper. I wanted to spend more time with the cheerleader.
And the conflict with the chainsaw.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, without this deep narrative, like, there were a few times I got stuck, and I really just, you know, just the tips is what I went to look for, and I really had a hard time.
Oh boy. No. Well, that was something I would say. I'm so proud of you.
Sorry about that. I don't really know where to go with
two years of this, and we're starting to rub off on each other in more ways than one.
Whoa.
I think the point is of this review is that I feel like it's kind of a hard sell for $60. And some people are going to love it, and some people are just going to totally hate it. And I remember our buddy Derek asking me on Xbox while I was playing the game, he's like, what do you think of Lollipop Chainsaw? And I was like, I can't decide if this game is horribly awesome or horribly bad. You know? Because I really think that those are the two categories that it falls under. So, like, for me, you know, it's like it's a rent. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah,
for other people, they'll play it, you know, 5-6 times and have a great time.
Did it feel weird going from – because Suda is pretty classically a Nintendo guy, right?
Well, he his first, like, couple of games were on Nintendo. And I think they ported No More Heroes to PlayStation 3.
Oh, did they? Okay.
And I thought it was supposed to come out on – Xbox Live Arcade, but I'm not sure it ever did.
Yeah. Okay.
And like, there were definitely things in this game that I was like, oh man, if this was on the Wii, this would be kind of interesting, you know? But like,
yeah,
when you're just pushing buttons, you're like, okay, just a controller. But I could almost say at times, like, this would have been great with motion controls, like, not motion controls, but like with the Wii controls.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Not like Kinect.
Well, let's move on. So Scott, I'll talk about my really quick. So I haven't gotten to play much because, like I said earlier, I was traveling a lot. But what I did get to fiddle around with was a new app that's on both iOS and Android, and it's called the Uber Cab app. And if you guys haven't heard of this, it's absolutely phenomenal. Hey, Matt, I think Matt actually mentioned it to me before, but for those of you that live in like a big, big city, Uber probably exists in your city. And what it is an app that you it's an app that you actually just type in, you know, it actually links to your checking account. And if you are having a hard time finding a cab, or you just want a nicer ride for a short little jaunt, all you do is click give me a cab. Right. And a Lincoln Town Car will show up generally within 5 to 10 minutes at your location.
Wow.
No questions asked. Okay. So you hit the button, and we did this, the whole bachelor party. This is how we kind of rolled in San Francisco. And it's pretty incredible. So you get to see the name of your driver as soon as you click submit, and says, okay, you know, Steve is your driver. He'll be here in 5 minutes. Lo and behold, 5 minutes later, the Lincoln Town Car shows up. You don't have to fiddle with any buttons on the app at all. It takes it directly out of your checking account, along with the tip and everything. And he just drives you to your location, says, have a nice day.
Does it take out the fare?
Yeah.
And the tip, or just the tip?
He's making a joke. Scott made another joke.
Just the tip, Scott. No, it's actually the fare and the tip. So it takes the fare and the tip. It takes it all out of your checking account, and you don't have to ever like fiddle with your wallet or a credit card or anything. And it's pretty awesome. I mean, the cars were really nice. They're leather interior. Yeah, super cool.
So like in major cities like San Fran, and I'm sure LA and in New York, they've got these things called livery drivers, I think is what they're called. And it's basically this. It's town car service. And usually what you have to do is you have to call them, order them to where you are. They'll come pick you up, and then you tell them where you're going. And it's like a flat fee kind of service, as opposed to cabs, which you get in, you know, pay per mile or whatever it is. What this app did that's genius is basically connects with all these different livery drivers and says, when you have no fare, they just register with the app saying they're available, and the app just kind of shoots them people whenever somebody checks in near them. And then they just go, oh, I'll go get them, pick them up. And then the town car comes and gets you right away without yeah. you. And what's awesome about it for you, especially Ash, probably, was that you're in a city where you don't know what the numbers are for all the different car services. So all you have to do is go on and just be like, I'm here. And then a car service shows up without any issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty awesome. And it wasn't incredibly expensive. It wasn't, it was probably 1.5 times more expensive than a taxi.
Was it? Usually they're pretty.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. And, you know, we didn't go for very long. San Francisco is pretty small. So, you know, we weren't spending more than, you know, 10 bucks. 15 bucks yeah. a ride at the most. So really cool. So if you live in a major city and, you know, you have, you know, want to ride in style from point A to point B for, you know, a little bit extra money, get that Uber app and check it out. It's free and it's pretty awesome.
So it's kind of like Grindr, but for cabs, right? Cabs.
Yeah, Scott, just like Grindr. You are in a.
Do you have to link it to your? Do you have to link it to your checking account, or can you link it to your credit card?
I believe you can link it to your credit card as well. So it just directly takes it out of your you know credit account, if you will.
Awesome.
Can you pre-order alcohol?
I don't know about that. You may just want to hire a limo if you want to. You want to go with that level of style. Yeah.
You're like two bottles of champagne, please.
Pick something up on the way.
Pretty cool. You know, I was just really impressed with how professional the drivers were. And like Matt said, they're all off duty professional drivers that were kind of between gigs at the time. And you know, the cars were all super clean. What really I marveled at was how fast they showed up. It was kind of insane. You're like, hit the button on your phone and they're like, be outside in 4 minutes. And literally like 4 minutes later, the car pulls up and you're just like, that's crazy. I just hit a button on my phone and it summoned a car. It's like, it's kind of absurd. So very cool.
There's a service here. Cool. There's a service here in our neighborhood called Eastern and we use them all the time, but they literally, you'll call them, you'll be like, hey, I need to pick up at my address. And they're like, okay, cross street. And you give them the cross street. They'll just go 2 minutes and hang up the phone on you. It's like the craziest. And the first couple of times it happened, I was like, what the fuck? Did he just hang up on me? I was like, is anybody coming to pick me up or what? And then sure enough, they come to pick me up. And now I'm just so used to it. I'm just like, pick me up here, hang up the phone before they even. It's like, they just do it.
You hang up first.
Just to show them. So Hillary, you've got more recockening?
Oh.
Hey now.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So I'm still playing this game. I literally have Dragon's Dogma like sitting right next to my Xbox every time I turn it on. I'm like, I should try that. And instead I keep playing Kingdoms of Amalur. So yeah, I'm like 60 hours in.
Oh,
and
my God.
There's still so much to do. I mean, my quest log is long, and I'm sure I'm maybe halfway through the main quest. So it's like, it's such a beautiful game. It's beautiful. It's got like lots to do. I mean, it's definitely one of those games like Skyrim and other RPGs that it's just massive, but it's love
definitely
it.
The tragedy of this console generation. I mean, I a lot of people really love that game, and what happened to them is unfortunate, but I'm glad you're liking it. You'll have to tell me like some of the high points thus far. I saw you were playing as like a warlock, and I like the word warlock. So what does that entail?
Yeah, so that's basically
is what I'm saying.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, so I was actually I stacked my finesse and my sorcery. So I'm like half rogue, half mage. And it's so awesome because you get to do all the cool like backstabby, you know, the shadow blades, all that stuff from the rogue. And then additionally, you have, you know, the big protective shield, or you can summon a guy to fight with you. So cool. Like you get the best of both worlds. I'm not really a warrior type player, but it's amazing to get the sorcery and the roguey kind of good stuff. But yeah, it's really cool. Now I'm like a spell caster or something, and I'm working on being like a shadow caster or something. Cool. So it's pretty cool. I'm really liking my roguey mage.
That is cool. I like being like hybrid classes and stuff like that. And there are, when you do get to play Dragon's Dogma, there are a couple classes that mix. Like there's a magic archer, which is essentially, you know, you get to actually cast spells and then have a magical bow on your back and do kind of like Legolas style archery. So there are a couple really cool hybrids that you'll get to play with, which will be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing it. It'll be funny to go from one RPG to the next, and then
I might do action, like play Gears with these guys first, and then play another RPG because it'll be weird. That always messes me up when I go from RPG to RPG.
Well, and then when Risen 2 comes out, I've been looking forward to Risen 2 forever. So that might take precedence. Yeah, Risen 1 is so good, and no one ever played it. It's like the hidden gem of games.
I need to find it. Yeah,
it's awesome.
And there's even, isn't there a DLC for Kingdoms as well? I mean, you're going to have to do that too.
Oh yeah, there's one DLC.
I feel like at this point, once I finally get through the game, it'll probably be like 110 hours and I'll be done.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like, no more. Yeah.
Yeah.
No mas.
No mas.
All right, Scott, tell us a little bit about Spirit Camera 3DS.
Okay. So this is going to be my summer game pile this week is Spirit Camera. I wanted to play this game because it looked intriguing and I heard it used the cameras and like the AR functionality of the 3DS. So I decided to give it a try. And pretty much what it is it's sort of like a maybe like a thriller story that you experience by interacting with characters on the screen. The game comes with this like booklet, an AR booklet, so you interact with the AR booklet while you play the game. And then it also does some augmented reality in the house. So like a lot of the game is basically requires you to stand up and like spin around a lot to look for things in your living room. And oddly enough, that's where all the combat takes place too. So the basic idea behind the Spirit Camera is that like there's this house and creatures from this book are like coming out of the book and then like haunting your house. And then you fight the creatures in the house. It's kind of weird. Huh. It's really interesting idea. But the story is actually kind of short on the short side. I think I played through it in like two settings. But the AR functionality in the book works really well. And like for most of the game, you'll be talking to a character who like appears in your surroundings. So you talk to her and then she asks you to go look for something in the book. And then like sometimes like things will pop out of the book or scenes take place in the book. And then you fight a spirit comes out and you fight the spirit. And the fighting is really just like more of like a, you have to search for them in your living room and take pictures of them at the right times and stuff like that. And then that's kind of like the gist of the game. And you just kind of rinse and repeat a few times and then it's over. But I think it's a good proof of concept of what is possible. But the problem is that the campaign, like the story is pretty short. And this being a Japanese game, when you finish the campaign, it goes, you've unlocked story mode plus. Yeah. Play through again to learn more about the story. And it's like, why didn't I have this? Like, just tell me that there was a hard mode. I would have played hard the first time, right?
Yeah.
And the other weird thing is that, like, the AR book requires a lot of light. And if you've ever used a 3DS, you'll notice that the screen is pretty glossy. Like, the top screen is glossy. So, right? So you have a lot of light, a glossy screen, and then a game that's supposed to be spooky, so it's dark. I was looking at myself most of the time in the reflection of the 3DS screen, like, because that's not what's supposed to happen. Like, if you play a game like Kid Icarus, it's super bright. You don't think about your reflection. You know, you don't even see yourself in the screen. You can play it in the dark. So I don't know. This game was like, I feel like it didn't need to be a thriller. I felt like this game could have been something else. It could have been just an like RPG.
An interesting use of the AR, essentially.
Yeah, at least it's innovative, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, that's my beef with Nintendo. And, like, anytime, like, a novel control scheme comes out or novel hardware comes out is that you really need to make things that actually use it to sort of justify, like, the functions at, you know, anyways. So
yeah.
And then, like, after you clear the story, there's, like, some mini games and stuff you can play. But that's really it. So it's not really like as deep of an experience that I wanted it to be. But I think if you are a 3DS owner and you're looking for something that kind of showcases some of the other features of the 3DS, other than the 3D, like Spirit Camera is like worth a used copy or a rent, I guess. It's just weird. Cool. You know what I mean? There's a lot of like,
yeah, I think I heard them talk about this on Press to Reset a couple months ago. I think,
I think Mel was playing it.
Yeah, okay. And I'm glad you gave it a shot. It did seem like something that you would enjoy, but you know, I mean, it's hard to get something that's deep on a 3DS.
I mean, but like Kid Icarus I think has something like 26 levels in it or some shit like that. I've been playing that game forever and I love it. I don't know what was up with this game. It's weird to like, you know, I'll tell you what the 3DS doesn't do is that it's not like the Kinect, so it can't, like, if I'm standing in this room, it could put like a full size character on top of my bookshelf, which perspective wise doesn't look right. It's really strange. So when you're trying to fight these characters like in your living room or in your bedroom or whatever that are supposed to be like appearing all around you. They don't always like appear in the right proportions. So there will be like a tiny little person like standing on top of my TV stand or something. And it's like super bizarre. I don't know. I mean, it's a good experience. It should be the start of something that, you know, like this is a proof of concept, not like a full thing, in my opinion.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, so Matt, you finished Hunger Games.
Well, hold on. So
just wave your hands at me when you want me back.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say we need to warn before we start moving this. I did have
5 minutes.
I did have one question, and this is off topic but on topic. Scott, is there a Phoenix Wright game for the 3DS yet or no?
You know what? I don't think there is.
That is such a fucking awesome game too.
What is sorely lacking from the Nintendo 3DS are first party titles or like those blockbuster titles like Phoenix Wright.
Yeah.
Or like even a Professor Layton, which I understand is super popular. So
I never did Professor Layton. I played Phoenix Wright, and I loved the hell out of it. I really didn't expect much from it at all, and I ended up really loving the game.
So, a game like that would be super awesome, especially with an AR booklet, because if you're like an attorney, you could do like research ahead of time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'll never know.
All right, so Ash is gone.
He's in the cone of silence.
He's in the cone of silence. We've mentioned this a few times that I was reading Hunger Games after, I don't know if I ever made fun of it, but I never was really looking to read it. And then I picked it up. The reason I picked it up was it was on the Amazon Prime's like free readers list. So I picked it up in the in the Prime library and read the first one. I loved the first one. Got the second one. Liked the second one. Picked up the third one. Finished it yesterday.
Yeah.
So, first we should say this is spoiler full. So if you have not read any of the Hunger Game books, or you've only read one or two of them, or you've only seen the movie and you don't want to know the rest of the story of Hunger Games, now is the time to fast forward about probably 10 minutes and then 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes and catch up with the rest of the podcast there. Cause we're gonna talk about Father's Day and that's a nice thing. So, all right, so I had to look up. I am not good with ending controversies. I put in quotes.
Okay. Because
I kind of always just view things as ending how the creator intended them to end, and it's not really my story. I enjoyed it. I'm glad they made it, but I didn't write it, so I'm okay with it ending however they decided it should end.
Right.
So I had to actually look up the controversy to see what it was, what the hubbub was.
What was the controversy?
There was a few. Some people thought it was really light and kind of rushed at the end, that they felt like when it ended and Katniss is all of a sudden having kids and like they just like rush through this epilogue part that everybody's like, well, what the fuck? I would have loved to know what those kids' names were or what they were doing at the time. You know, like that kind of thing was one of them. The other was that I think some people actually had a problem with the choice of her shooting coin.
Oh, really? I totally expected that to happen.
Hillary, I did too. Am I right on that, Hillary?
Yeah, I did too. That was a controversy, but I agreed with the author on that
one. Like, I was like...
I wasn't really concerned about Katniss's choices as much as I was just... I felt like it was like, and I have to finish this somewhere, so I'm going to end it here.
Yeah, it did feel like that. It felt like they were building, and then it just was like, yeah, fuck, end it. I'm out of pages. Like, like what happened?
Yeah, also the romance, I know that it wasn't the reason you were reading the book, but the romance aspect seemed really light. I mean, I don't know.
I don't feel like they needed the love triangle. It really felt just pointless. Like, the story between her and Peeta made sense to me, and I was like, okay, that's going to be the love interest. Totally cool. Mm-hmm. Worked for me, made sense. All of it was good. The Gale stuff felt really forced.
Yeah.
And felt like they were trying to hammer something into the story that just didn't, like, why can't she just be best friends with Gale? And why can't Gale just be best friends with her? Like, why is there this
a young
weird...
adult novel, right?
Yeah. Like, why does this love triangle have to exist? And maybe it would in real life. I don't know. You know, like teenage boys are into ladies, but like, well, you know,
some of them,
you know,
would have been a love square with Miley Cyrus is what it would have been.
You know what I mean? Like it felt really weird. So, and then like, that was the other controversy was everybody was really mad about how quickly Gale's story ended. And that had literally zero completion to it. It just was like, he's in two now doing other things. And you're like, oh, cause she literally like gets taken by the guards, passes out, wakes up, and then she's married to Peeta, has kids, and Gale's gone. And that's like that's like the whole thing. There's no more to it.
Right.
So
I really thought there'd be more backstory on Haymitch too. Like, cause they kind of build him up this enigma.
I kind of feel like that's they're going to do more books, to be honest with you.
Oh, do you really think so?
I could see a prequel with Haymitch's story. Yeah. They tease around his story a lot without ever really getting into it.
Cause they introduce all these old timers. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Mm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and also the setting is so rich that there's a lot of possibility there. Like, you know, and how did the Hunger Games start? I mean, they told us in like a, you know, kind of a background, but it could be cool to see, you know, how it originally came to be and the reaction of the districts when, you know, the capital said, now we're going to take your children.
Yeah. Yeah. There was also controversy about Katniss choosing to do another Hunger Games with the Capitals kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and I feel like the drug thing was a cop out, not a cop out for Katniss, a cop out for the writer to be able to do whatever she kind of wanted without having to have any kind of real reasoning behind it. It just was like, well, she was fucked up and her PETA was fucked up and that's just how it works. And you're like,
oh yeah. I thought that was a little weird when he came back like that.
Yeah. Well, I don't really like it when writers use the they passed out and then they wake up to guess what, everything's different.
That is all over these books.
Yeah, I'm not into that. I mean, I get it. Like once is okay. It's like, oh God, that's wow. But I don't know. I felt like it was a device that shouldn't have.
So how did you guys kind of rank? For me, it was like Hunger Games was my favorite book. I would actually probably put Mockingjay as my second, and then the middle one felt really rehashed to me, and I just didn't really enjoy it. But I don't know how you guys felt. Like, what were your feelings on that series?
I would put them in order.
Really?
As they are now. Yeah, I didn't really care for Mockingjay that much. I was kind of like, I was so confused, like, reading through that book. I was just like, I don't even know, man. You know, like, they kind of, like, broke down that, like, I don't know, to me it was kind of like Harry Potter, in the sense where it's like every year Harry Potter goes to school, something happens, and then when you get to Harry Potter 7, all of a sudden they're not in school anymore and they're camping. And I thought that's kind of like what Mockingjay was, where it's like, well, they're not doing a Hunger Games anymore, they're just like,
well, see, but that's what that's what I would argue is different though, because me, Harry Potter goes to school and something happens, but it's not like the same thing happens every year. And in 2, when they were like, you're in the Hunger Games again, I was like, what the fuck? I literally almost put the book down. I was like, this is fucking stupid. Sure. I don't even want to read this. And then I was like, well, maybe it'll be totally different and weird. And then it was like, nope, it's just the Hunger Games again. I'm like, I'm just reading the same damn story a second time. I knew they were going to go somewhere with it. It was the only reason I kept going. Mm-hmm. But it just was like, right when it happened, my initial gut reaction was like, turn the book off. Let's not turn it off. Turn the book off. Wow. We are truly in the 21st century.
Why are reading it on your Kindle?
close the book, you know, and put it down and never pick it up again. That was definitely was like my gut to that. But I don't know. The series as a whole, I felt was good. You know, it was written pretty well. I didn't need the love triangle.
I think that makes like some pretty good movies.
I have to see that. I'm going to watch the movie now that I've finished everything. What did you say, Hillary?
No, it's kind of like the love triangle that was in Snow White and the Huntsman.
Yeah, pointless. You know? Just there.
Yeah, I would agree more with Scott on the ranking. However, I think that like the first one was innovative and new, and it was like, oh, wow, you know, this is off in the future, and it has a different premise than what I was used to seeing. Mm-hmm. You know, because we've been inundated with, you know, vampire books.
Yeah.
And this
yeah.
was like, wow, this is new.
That's true.
And yeah, and that's and I really loved the first book, but you know, I guess the second one would be next, but it's like really far down the chain. I was really disappointed with 2 and 3. I mean, 3 I was the most disappointed with.
Really?
But yeah, but number 2 didn't.
I mean,
the series as a whole, like I love the IP. Like I love the setting and the idea behind it, but I felt like it wasn't all that I wanted it to be.
Okay. I kind of tempered it. I feel like I wasn't super disappointed the whole time because and this is where I would say it strays from Harry Potter. The Harry Potter, I never read Harry Potter and felt like, well, I'm reading a kid's book. You know, like every time I didn't forgive it for things. And
oh, I'm definitely not trying to compare the two series, not at all. I know what you're saying.
But I'm saying that this book, I definitely read it with the sense that, well, this is a, like, I feel like it's the same way I would read Twilight, which is like, well, this is a teen book. You know, like I'd forgive it for things that are happening because it's written, you know, for young adults to read and not necessarily written with the idea that somebody who's had plenty of life experience is reading this book, you know, or something like that.
Right.
So, no, you're right.
The only other thing I'd like to kind of like cap it off with is that given a choice between what I know about books like Twilight or stories of that and Hunger Games, I would much prefer my 13-year-old daughter to be reading a story about Katniss than a story about Bella.
Sure. I agree. Absolutely.
Like, I didn't read this book going like, what a weird character. It was just like, the way she reacted to things felt very normal. It felt real, but she also had that kind of toughness and grit to her to like make it a good, strong character that I was like happy to read about. You know what I mean? Like that felt Agreed. Good and felt like empowering in a way. So,
yeah. Well, and also, I mean, I would really not, if I had kids, I would not want them to read Twilight at such a young age, just simply because it's all about you're falling in love with someone who's, is like 70 years old or more, 100 years older than you, who's killed people, and you find that fascinating.
13 may have been the wrong age, but my teenage daughter or whatever, I'd much rather read about like a girl who rises up to an occasion than about a girl who's stuck in a love triangle. You know, even though this one is stuck in a love triangle, it's literally not the main, it's clearly not the main point of the story. And, you know, so.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's signal Ash and we will move on with the podcast.
He's removing the cone of silence.
He is.
Yes.
All right. We are back with our rated NA 64 question of the week. And the question was, in honor of Father's Day, did you grow up with a gamer or a nerdy dad? If so, what games or movies did your dad play? And we have a handful of responses from our awesome community as well as our own. And you guys want to actually start off?
Scott posted a cool picture today of him and his nerdy dad.
Cool.
I think it may have been my parents that got me into Disney World. I mean, like most parents do, but my dad didn't do a lot of gaming, but I do remember, like, I think my parents were responsible for me, like, getting started with Nintendo Power when I was a kid, because I remember having that first issue of Nintendo Power. I don't know where it came from, and I think they must have sent it to people in the mail that maybe bought a Nintendo and sent in the registration card or something. So, I mean, without my dad, I wouldn't be a gamer, you know, for them to get me started on stuff like that.
It's cool.
Which is pretty awesome. So, I mean, I know I would like to get my kids gaming if I have kids someday. I think that would be awesome.
I think that it's changed a lot. Like, I, you know, as you guys are aware, I was just at a wedding for like essentially like 3 days, and there were a lot of little kids there. Those little kids are so incredibly tech savvy, and they walk around with tablets and iPhones, and they're playing with them all the time. And we're talking like three-year-old with a tablet, just like, you know, not smashing it, not breaking it. They know it's fragile. And they're, you know, using it to play games on their own. And that's very, very different. Like, you know, I didn't get my hand on a game until I was probably like, you know, maybe seven, really. Mm-hmm. First time I played anything. But it is different. And I think gaming is a little bit more acceptable at this point. I mean, social games are just massive. And I think people of, you know, all walks of life are playing them. So,
yeah, I mean, my dad is definitely the reason why I'm a gamer / sci-fi nerd / you know, all kinds of nerdy movies and TV shows and games. So, yeah, I mean, to be fair, I was an only child, so I had to play the part of the son and the daughter. So, you know, I was out throwing like, you know, baseball with my dad, and then, you know, going shopping and getting makeup with my mom, and then coming home and playing, you know, Atari or Nintendo or whatever game console. Yeah, and like he bought me the consoles and taught me how to play games and introduced me to Star Wars and Star Trek, and yeah, all my nerdy cred goes to my dad. So
it's awesome. Very
cool. Good times.
Happy Father's Day, Dad.
Indeed. We have some answers from some folks as well. The first is from Chris Sisley, our friend in Brooklyn.
He lives down the street
from
me.
And down the street from Matt. And he says, I saw Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure with my dad just about every weekend the summer it came out, easily more than 10 times. And actually, you know what? I went and saw this with my dad in the theater as well. And I told when I met Alex Winter last year, I told him about this, and I kind of embarrassed myself in front of him. But this was one of the reasons I got interested in history was Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, because it was my first exposure to like a lot of those historical characters. And when I met Alex Winter, I totally just gushed and was like, "You're the reason I'm a teacher." And he's like, "Just get the fuck away from me."
But, so great, man.
Right. Oh my God. And now at the end of the year, I actually show that film to my classes, like the last day of class when they're done with their finals and
that
stuff.
That is amazing.
So it is. Oh, it is. And they're like, "We know all these people." I'm like, yes.
So Ash, didn't your dad kind of foster your love of movies, speaking of that?
Yeah, my dad, it's interesting. Like, my dad was always a big movie buff, and you know, he nothing like the level I'm at now, but he always showed me movies that I shouldn't have been watching when I was a kid. Like, I think I saw Apocalypse Now when I was like 5.
Wow.
You know, and things like that. And like, I had no filter with movies growing up. And I don't know if that was bad parenting or else, or my parents were just like, "He's mature enough." But I talked about it on the podcast in the very beginning, but I had my own video rental card when I was about 7. And I would ride to, I lived on an island. So I'd ride down to the island video rental place called Pick a Flick. And I would rent everything. Like, they would rent me rated R movies and everything. And I would just watch. I watched every horror movie in the entire video store. So it was, you know, my parents were totally, I don't know why, but they were like, "Great, you know, watch those horrible slasher films, see what happens to you." So I watched all of them, and, you know, my parents were definitely into the movies and stuff like that. As for games, though, it's weird. Like, I have a very addictive personality. So, like, when I got into gaming, my dad was like, really, he's like, "You need to not do that as much as you do." And you know, my mom was the same way. He's like, "You spend way too much time doing those video games."
Wait, so those are the two best impressions I've ever heard of your parents. Usually it's a fat Italian guy and a whiny Jewish mother.
Yeah. That's true.
"You need to stop playing those video games."
And that's my mom impression. But my dad had a system before I did. He had an Atari 2600, and he had a bunch of games. I remember playing like Enduro and Tank and all these, you know, all those like really old school Frogger and Pitfall. Of course, Pitfall. Absolutely. So I played all of those on his system when I was a little kid. And then when I got my first Nintendo and my Sega Master System, he stopped playing. I don't think I've seen him play a game since. So he's always interested when I tell him. He'll you know, see something on CNN about a game. Like, he knew about Mass Effect, and I was like, he's like, "Yeah,
well, that's awesome.
Playing." Yeah, and he's like, "You playing that game?" I'm like, "Oh, am I ever?" You know. So we'll talk for a few minutes, but his attention span is pretty. He doesn't have much attention span for stories about video games, so he kind of tunes out about halfway through the conversation.
Just really quickly, I just want to let everybody know that my Father's Day gift to my dad was Mass Effect 3. And we spent about an hour on the phone talking strategy today.
That's
so
cool.
That is
incredible.
Dad!
That is
Mass
so cool.
Rad.
Yeah.
Yay, Hillary's dad. That's awesome. Did you tell him what class he should play?
He imported his save from Mass Effect 2, and he's got his own.
He's played the trilogy.
Did he start with one? That,
so your dad's actually a gamer, like, right now.
Yeah, sort of. He's got, like, a man cave, and he'll, like, escape from my mom.
Wow.
He can go downstairs and play.
We all need a man.
Yeah. Or a woman cave in my defense.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about your woman cave. Let's just...
Uh-oh.
Zing.
Sorry, Dad.
That's unfortunate.
We just ruined a precious moment.
Don't you feel bad, Ash?
No, I'm a terrible person. Oh, boy.
So, at Ariana Lee, our friend Ari Bailey says, "Because of my dad, I love Star Trek, Briscoe County Jr., Close Encounters of the Third Kind, X-Files, Outer Space, and Magic. And he bought us a ColecoVision in 1986. So, thanks to him, I know how awesome Burger Time is." And Ari is a total nerd, gaming nerd. She played D&D with us in our troop. She did.
Yeah. She was in our crew. I miss D&D.
I miss it so bad. When I was listening to her talk about her, sorry, when I was listening to Hillary, that girl, when I was listening to that girl, whoever's sitting in this Skype room, when I was listening to Hillary talk about the Rekakening, I was fantasizing about D&D and how much I miss it.
Yeah.
It's such a good campaign, too.
was. We'll never know what happened.
Never.
Just to piss Matt off, Hillary, I played a character that was mute.
It was awesome.
And the only way he would talk, he got his tongue cut out or something like that. The only way he would talk is he had a familiar little imp that would travel with him. And so whenever I talked, I would be the imp and I'd be like, Master says that I have to go to the ship. So I talked like that for like months at a time.
That was such a fucking great campaign though, and we're not gonna sidetrack for too long. Because like Scott came to me and he's like, all right, I know what I want to play. And I'm like, what's that? Because everybody had to have a role. Like they were in airships kind of. They had a role. Scott's like, I want to be the chef. And I was like, okay, cool. And he's like, chef. He's like, and I'm gonna make a chef and I'm only gonna fight with chef things. And he literally carried like a rolling pin and a knife, and like that's how he fought. And like
that's awesome. It was ridiculous.
I made my little model to carry a rolling pin, and I was so stoked for the campaign that I wrote a 2-page backstory for him too.
And to be fair, I hated my job at the time, and I would just spend days at a time writing this campaign out, and I created this like humongous backstory, like to the point where I think our first play session was just me reading about where you were, what was going on at the time. And I was like, here's this and this and there's this. I'd like printed it all out for everybody. It was ridiculous. But anyways, I do miss it horribly.
That's awesome.
So I think I'm the only one left. My dad was not a gamer nerd. He did spark my love of gaming because in like 80... God, it was probably like 86 or 87. They saved up forever and bought this computer. So we had an IBM in like the late 80s, and all it played was Load Runner. I played the living shit out of Load Runner. I played it so much. It was ridiculous. I played Load Runner in like one other game, and it was like all I got to play, but I played those endlessly. Awesome. That's what started my gaming. But what he really created me as far as a nerdy thing goes was... he's the reason that I like to like take things apart and put them back together. Like I used to sit in the garage with him and like disassemble stuff or build things with him. And it's like how I got my love of creating stuff, I guess. And, that's
cool.
Kind of the nerdy thing that my dad instilled in me. I remember when I was in Cub Scouts and we made, pine car derbies. I was nerd heaven for my dad. Me and him would sit in the garage for like ever. He had like schematics and plans and how we would build it and like shape it and which way it needed to be weighted to run the fastest and all this other crap. It was ridiculous. But yeah, that's what kind of nerd my dad was that we bonded on. So
very cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
Can I add one more thing since we are talking about Father's Day?
Absolutely.
While my dad wasn't a huge gamer, my grandfather is probably the reason why I'm into computers as much as I am, because he had a Packard Bell. And I think before that we may have had a Tandy or something.
Oh man.
But anyways, the point of the story is that like he had games on that computer and I figured out how to use them. So he had like this King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, which was awesome. And he also had Leisure Suit Larry on the computer.
Oh man.
And he did not care that I used it. So like I was like maybe 10 years
early
old.
Early perversions.
10 years old, playing, you know, point and click adventure, Leisure Suit Larry, like learning about things.
Games.
Yeah. I didn't need the talk. I played Leisure Suit Larry, you know what I'm saying?
You didn't need the talk.
Yeah, you were taught by Larry himself.
You just gotta bag it up, man, because if you don't, game over.
Like, man.
Oddly attracted to 4-bit boobs.
Yeah.
Whenever I see 4-bit boobs, it's
over. Man, and that censored sign would just do this in the bed. Oh man, that was good times.
He's making a strange hand motion for those of you in the audience.
You remember that? Because once you bedded that girl at the motel, like it would just say censored.
He still remembers this vividly.
But
this is getting kind of weird.
The censored sign would just bounce up and down.
He's taking his clothes off.
Did you kickstart the Leisure Suit Larry?
No, I did not. But you knew it would get funded anyways, you know?
Yeah. So, by the way, my dad said when we were talking about Mass Effect 3 today, he said, yeah, Ashley likes me again. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to know that.
Good time.
This is weird. It's
another 80s. Don't tell mom.
Oh, man.
I know. I'm like, okay.
Maybe we'll get Kimberly Brooks on the podcast and really embarrass him. That's what we should do. We should get Kimberly Brooks on the podcast and get your dad in on Skype, and then they can talk, and it'll be the most awkward thing ever.
Yeah, and my dad used to be like a radio host.
Oh,
like,
what? On radio. What?
He was like a disc jockey. Yeah, he was like a really cool dude, you know? Disc all jockey, right. Radio man. Yeah, no, he would dig that.
Can you do the awesome. Podcast intro, and we'll just reuse that and just like put a new number in each time.
Yeah,
he'll do the whole like we get a real radio voice instead of my nasally whatever it is voice during the podcast. It'd be great.
Let's wrap this up.
Just like Leisure Suit Larry.
Ooh, yes. Ooh. Zing.
My dad also bought the Cobra base for G.I. Joe for me for Christmas one year. That big Cobra dome. Yeah. And I was awake, and I heard him drop it out of the closet on top of himself and start cussing, and then kick it down the hallway. And then he put it together, and I like freaked out the next morning. And he told me later, he was like, "Yeah, if you hadn't freaked out, I would have completely lost it Christmas morning." He said it was the biggest pain in the ass to get it out of the closet and then like get it all put together.
That thing was
it's
huge.
Humongous.
That was second only to the aircraft,
which
carrier.
My friend Tim had down the block. We had the whole G.I. Joe setup. It was amazing.
Yeah, I had a friend named Tim who had the aircraft carrier as well.
Was it the same Tim?
It might have been the same Tim.
Did you drive Timmy! 5 hours to hang out with him?
Spooky. Yeah, of course. No. All right, so that is episode 64 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate, Facebook /NerdAppropriate. Where else, gang?
Google Plus, Goodreads. We're all over the social nets.
We are. As always, a big thanks to Jimmy Hinson, Big Giant Circles, for our intro song. You can find him on Bandcamp or at biggiantcircles.com. We love you for that, Jimmy.
You can
in a very dirty way.
You can email us all, Ash, Scott, Matt, or Hillary at NerdAppropriate. You can follow Hillary at Hillary Heskett. 1L2Ts. I almost messed it up. 1L2Ts. Right? Anything else? Anybody else got pimping
yes,
stuff?
Perfect.
You want to pimp some stuff?
That's
you want
it.
Pimp things?
Plugs.
Pimp it out.
No, we're good to go.
Yeah.
All right. I said pimp a lot.
West Side. Welcome to West Side.
I'm on West Side today, too. West Side Suckles. What?
Oh, God.
Gangster.
Throwing gang signs.
Yeah.
That was great.